Okay, Greg Kokel here. Stand to raise. I'm chuckling because I got my board ops are dancing to the music, and it is an odd sight. Oh, Greg Kokel, Stand to Reason. That's the show, not Stand to Dance. My daughter is a dancer, my 13-year-old, and I don't know where she gets these moves. She just kind of bebops around the house and doing this boogaloo stuff that, I don't know, her joints are made of rubber, but it actually looks kind of clever. But I don't know how she can do it. I can't move that way. In other words, my body physically is not able to do, you know, flex that way. Plus, I can't get my body to make these moves the way she does. So anyway, thank you for joining our show. And I'm always happy to do what I can to clear the air about important issues, at least give you a piece of my mind about them. And hopefully it's clarifying. I have something I want to talk about. But before I do, I just found out, you know, we launched a Red Pen Logic last week. It was about a week ago. That's right. And there was a challenge from a progressive Christian that basically said Jesus was a racist, and he read the passage. But then Jesus repented and got woke, apparently. So Tim Barnett couldn't pass this up. It was actually a TikTok and not a tweet that he responded to. And so you can catch the whole thing at Red Pen Logic. The title of this one is called Progressive Christianity Gets Jesus Completely Wrong. All right. That went out last week. We had 16,000 views since then, and which apparently it's hitting a nerve and got almost universally thumbs up, although there are 14 people put a thumbs down, which it actually surprises me a little bit to hear that. Not that everybody's got to agree with our view, our view, but this was a charge regarding Jesus and what the text allegedly implied about Jesus' view about things. And Tim completely refuted the view, going to other texts and dealing even with the context of that text, which is Jesus and the Syrophoenician woman. And so I can't imagine why people would, like, I disagree with your interpretation of that text. Really? Did you read it? Did you watch the whole RPL? It's one thing to disagree with a view. It's another thing to disagree with a text that promotes a view. Because the second is simply a matter of, oh, I understand what he means to be saying. Now, I disagree with what he said, but I understand what he means to be saying. So it's fair to say that. But this is a case where people said, no, I think Jesus was a racist, and he repented when the Syrophoenician woman spoke truth to power, allegedly. So anyway, you can see the whole thing play out there. Tim does such a superb job. And I encourage you to subscribe, because every time a new one comes out, you'll get an alert. I think that's how it works. Right now, 25,000 subs, and we're just shy of about a year doing Red Pen Logic. So there's a whole slew of them there, and you'll enjoy them. I think it's a great educational tool. Now, speaking of educational tools, during STR Ask recording this morning, Amy and I were responding to a question from a Christian about the issue of tolerance. And I have talked about this at different times. I did a PragerU, some of you know what that is, on the issue of tolerance. You can find it there if you want. And I have written about it in a number of different places. But still, at the same time, there are challenges to the notion of tolerance that people have raised. And this was an example of one. So let me read the challenge. And we did respond to this in hashtag STR Ask, which you are welcome, by the way, to send your questions in for. And we love them. And Amy and I, we do like 2 half-hour segments, 25-minute segments every week answering questions. As long as you go to Twitter, or frankly, just about anywhere, and leave a question of Twitter length, and somewhere in that question, put hashtag STR Ask, then Amy's going to find it and we'll deal with it. But this is one that came up. And it said this, the questioner said this: how would you respond to someone citing the paradox of tolerance as a reason to not tolerate Christian views. Okay, I'm emphasizing important words here. The paradox of tolerance, I'll clarify in just a moment, but how would you respond to someone who cites the paradox of tolerance as a reason to silence Christians, not tolerate Christian views? And then there's a citation on this notion regarding Karl Popper. Now, Karl Popper, with a K, is a philosopher of science from the 40s. And well-known, actually, made a significant contribution, but he cites this paradox. And so I'm reading the reference that was given to us. The paradox of tolerance states that if a society is tolerant without limit, its ability to be tolerant is eventually seized or destroyed by the intolerant. Karl Popper described it as the seemingly paradoxical idea that in order to maintain a tolerant society, the society must be intolerant of intolerance. So there you have it. And actually, there's a point to be made here. If what one understands tolerance to be is a freedom, a kind of a freedom, an allowance of sorts, we will allow these things that we may not agree on. And that is, incidentally, a central feature of any kind of tolerance. The behavior or the speech or the attitudes or the views that are tolerated by someone are views with which that person disagrees. If you don't disagree in principle with the view being expressed and you allow it to be expressed, you are not tolerating it. It's your view. Okay? So I would say sometimes to someone, do you tolerate homosexuality? Of course we do. Oh, well, then you think it's mistaken in some sense. No, of course not. We're all for it. Well, then you don't tolerate it. You agree with it. So tolerance is a virtue that is exercised in an atmosphere of disagreement or disapproval. It has to do with the way one acts in that circumstance, all right? Now, of course, the point that was being made in the so-called paradox of tolerance is that you can't just tolerate everything. Because if you tolerate everything, that means there are people who will be allowed to act in a way that can destroy the liberty for people in general to be tolerant of each other. And that's why societies have to say no at some point. We can't tolerate that because this is a danger to the common good in some sense. And so there is a type of intolerance that we must not be tolerant of because it destroys the possibility of any other tolerance. Now, what's going on here in the question is apparently this Christian had been challenged, and the paradox of intolerance invoked against Christian views. Notice they mention Christian views. It's not just the Christian, it's the views of Christians. And the rationale is, we are a tolerant society, but we don't tolerate you. Well, that sounds like a contradiction. But it's not, because we have to say no to certain things that would destroy tolerance in our community, generally speaking. And so we are intolerant of a certain type of intolerance. We don't allow certain things. And this kind of reminds me of a statement that I saw once, or I read about, a sign posted on a campus in the East. I think it was in New England. And the sign said this: it's not wrong to think you're right, but it's not right to think others are wrong. It's not wrong to think you're right, but it's not right to think others are wrong. So the point there is, well, it's okay for you to have your view. But if your view, and you think your view is right, but if your view is expressed in a way that disagrees with others, in the sense that you think you're right and they're wrong. You're telling them they're wrong. Well, that's not right. Now, I got a chuckle here, and many of you are rolling your eyes because you realize this is obviously self-refuting. To say it's not right to think others are wrong, when you say it's not right, that is a phrase that is synonymous with saying it's wrong. So you might as well just translate the second half of that aphorism with it's wrong to think I think you're wrong when you think others are wrong. And there the self-refuting nature of it is more obvious. It doesn't become coherent just because you don't use the words, I think it's wrong to think others are wrong. But if you say it's not right to think others are wrong, you've said the same thing in principle, in substance. Okay. And so this is where this odd paradox comes in. We believe in tolerance, but we have to be intolerant at some point of other types of intolerance. And it's not really a contradiction, though it is seems like it, but we have to be intolerant in some ways to preserve a broader tolerance. So how do you respond to this kind of thing? And the first thing I thought of was something that I wrote, a distinction that I made, that I clarified in the relativism book on the nature of tolerance itself. And there I talked about distinguishing between three types of tolerance. That is tolerance of persons, tolerance of behaviors, and tolerance of ideas. Now, the first type of tolerance, and these are all distinct, by the way, and if you don't keep them distinct, you cannot solve this paradox well. The paradox is resolved just by a power play. I'm saying you're intolerant, so I'm going to be intolerant of whatever your intolerance is, and I'm strong enough to shut you up. And then my way gets communicated, all right? But if you just make these distinctions, you can avoid the paradox. And one is a tolerance of persons, all right? And this is what might be called a civic tolerance or respect for other people. The idea that our tolerance of people that are not like us, who choose to live differently or to believe differently, in many ways to act differently, and so we're not on board with them. I'm trying to remember how I started this sentence. Though we're not on board with them, and therefore we disagree with them in some way, we still are committed to treating them with respect and a certain level of kindness and a certain level of dignity. Why? Well, classically, that notion was grounded in the idea that human beings are made in the image of God, and therefore they are valuable in themselves, and as image bearers, we have an obligation to treat them in a certain way, even if we disagree with them. And I remember this movie that I saw called the Green Mile. Does that sound right? Yes, it's about a prisoner in prison. Tom Hanks was a prison guard, and Gary Oldman was the prison warden, and Gary Oldman was awful, and he plays awful characters really well. But the Tom Hanks character was gracious to the prisoner in question, even though the prisoner was guilty of a terrible crime. He was still treating the prisoner with respect as a human being, and there's a wonderful contrast that you can see vividly there. Well, that's the kind of tolerance that I'm talking about with regards to the first tolerance, okay? The second kind of tolerance is not tolerance of persons, but tolerance of behaviors. And we have never, as a country, been tolerant of all behaviors, because some behaviors are just injurious to the common good. And so there are lots of latitude that we're allowed, even if we disagree with the behavior personally, or we think the behavior is immoral. There aren't laws against every bit of immoral behavior. People can lie as long as they don't lie under oath. Then that's a bigger problem, right? But not every immoral act is made illegal. That would be overwhelming. It would be cumbersome for a society to do that. So there's great latitude to behave as one wishes to a point. And then we say no. And then the laws are invade upon individuals at a certain point, so they do not, we do not tolerate the behavior that could be significantly harmful to others. And so we have an intolerance of certain behaviors. And this, I think, is what's in view here in the paradox of intolerance, and that is that at some point you have to say those behaviors that we're calling intolerant behaviors are behaviors that the specific behaviors are so dangerous that we must not tolerate them. Okay. Now, what's interesting to me about the question as asked is it had to do with Christians and their points of view. That's what's not, it's not talking about behaviors. How would you respond to someone citing the paradox of tolerance as a reason not to tolerate Christian views? Okay, so this brings us to the third kind of tolerance, and that is tolerance of ideas. So you have tolerance of persons, respect. You have tolerance of behaviors, not always, sometimes yes, sometimes absolutely not. And then you have tolerance of ideas. So what does tolerance of ideas mean? Well, it could mean one of two things. It could mean respect. That is, we allow people to voice their ideas in the public square and then let the public square adjudicate whether the ideas are good ones or not. But the way it's worked out in our culture is that if you voice an idea that is inconsistent with one strain of thinking, and I'm just going to call it leftist thinking. You might call it politically correct thinking if you like, but it's leftist ideology. Let's face it. If you're then the views you hold are considered intolerant and so dangerous, allegedly, that they're actionable. We must not tolerate Christian views. Now, my question is, oh, well, first of all, that just seems like an abusive force. It's an abusive kind of definition of intolerance because you just mark as intolerant a view you don't like and then try to disqualify it. When the fact is, not all views are good views. Some are good, some are bad, some are smart, some are dumb, some are dangerous. And we ought to have the freedom in our corporate discussions to figure out which one is which. Which views are good ones and which views are bad ones. And if certain views expression are not tolerated, well, then how are you going to figure out what is good and bad, what is true and what is false? Here, the issue of truth is being trumped by power. And I've written in Solid Ground, if you read the March edition, where I talk about the primal sin, I said that societies are going to be run, cultures are going to be won by one or two forces, and that is the force of truth or the force of power. If a community is committed to truth, then that's good. If there is no commitment to truth and a willingness to silence contrary viewpoints is not a commitment to truth, then power is going to prevail. And that's what happens. People who don't like certain ideas, which they label intolerant because they disagree with them, use force to silence the viewpoints. Okay. So I think these three distinctives regarding tolerance are helpful to answer our question. When do we say no? When are we intolerant? Let me back up. When do we not tolerate intolerance? And the answer is when it's a harm to the public good. But it's got to be a real harm. So how are Christian views a harm to the public good? Here's the irony. Well, first of all, I can't think of any Christian view that is a harm to the public good. In fact, the way that we make our case for our views is that they advance the public good. And in fact, for the last, 200 years or so, the impact of Christianity as a worldview on our country has been magnificent. It is the Christian worldview that is the groundwork for the virtuous type of tolerance, respect for individuals, freedom of religion and freedom of speech, all of those kinds of things, where we allow a pluralism of beliefs and activities to a point. That's all part of the Christian worldview. So why should we be silenced when, in fact, it is our view that has created the atmosphere for liberal democracy that has served us so well for these hundreds of years? Okay. But there's another, there's the rest of the story on this, and that has to do with the Karl Popper citation, because I went to the source of this. Actually, Amy sent it to me, and thank you. Hat tip to Amy. And it was interesting when I read the entire passage. Now, I mentioned that this paradox of tolerance was articulated here by Karl Popper, 1945. All right. And he does say that if we extend unlimited tolerance even to those who are intolerant, if we are not prepared to defend a tolerant society against an onslaught of the intolerant, then the tolerant will be destroyed and tolerance with them. So that's the concern. And so we have to say no to what? To Christians, really? Were the dangerous ones? I don't think so. But here he continues, and this is from his book, The Open Society and Its Enemies. In this formulation, he writes, I do not imply, for instance, now notice he's already making a qualification. Next sentence, I do not imply that we should always suppress the utterance of intolerant philosophies. As long as we can counter them by rational argument and keep them in check by public opinion, suppression would certainly be most unwise. But we should claim the right to suppress them if necessary, even by force, for it may easily turn out that they are not prepared to meet us on the level of rational argument, but again by denouncing all argument. They may forbid their followers to listen to rational argument because it's deceptive, and then teach them to answer arguments by the use of their fists or pistols. So, when you read the rest of this, and I was going slowly with some of these phrases because I was hoping they would ring familiar in your mind. The left denies the legitimacy of rational argument. This is why they try to silence it. They say that rational argument is simply a tool in the hands of white supremacists, for example. This is one way they do it. There isn't an appeal to reason. There's a rejection of reason. And in rejecting reason, they campaign to silence the opposition. So it turns out that when Karl Popper is talking about the paradox of tolerance, he is describing a circumstance that we actually are facing here. The irony is that somebody on the left is saying we should invoke this concept to silence the views of Christians. When they do that, they are doing the very thing that Karl Popper is concerned about. And so on Popper's rationale, we should be intolerant towards the left's lack of tolerance towards the expression of opposing views and allowing those views to be assessed in the jury of a public opinion as we give reasons for and against. This isn't happening. Those views are being silenced. That's what's dangerous, according to Karl Popper. Now, one postscript on this, we'll take a break and come to your calls, is that this was 1945, and what Popper was doing is he was responding he was responding to Plato's defense of benevolent despotism. All right. Now, you know, Plato, he's the philosopher, 4th century BC. And benevolent despotism is the view that societies are best run by despots. That would be, autocrats, right? That are in charge of everything. And this despot, though, is a good despot, not a bad despot. He's not in it for himself. He's in it for the good of the people. Okay. And that's my view, by the way. Just, I don't think it's realistic in this world. But I think benevolent despotism is the best. Democracies, even representative republics, they have all kinds of problems with them. But and as Churchill put it, it's the worst form of government, except for all the others, right? Benevolent despotism, in principle, I think is great. But in practice, there aren't those who are benevolent who are despots. Power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So, dictators, when they get power, that's a despot. They don't use it for the common good. They use it for themselves. Okay. But as it turns out, we have a benevolent despotism coming, and it's called the kingdom of God, ruled by Jesus with a fist of iron. Okay. And, but he's benevolent. And so it's going to be good, not bad. But what's curious about this is when Plato is making a defense for benevolent despotism, he, given the notion of benevolence, there is a morality that's in place that is a factor in the governance. So you have morality there. You have human beings who have a nature that is made for something beyond them, or a goal that they're shooting for. So there's a telos, or a goal in view. Humans are made to accomplish a certain thing that's called human flourishing. And this is denied, each of these things, by the left. There is no objective morality. There is just subjective preference. There are no natures. There's no human nature. There are just creatures that are emoting at this stage of their development in the evolutionary cycle. And certainly there is no telos. There is no purpose for humans. And this is why the purpose is reduced now to expressive individualism. I need to express my authentic self, which is just hedonism. All right? And I get to do what I want. So it's ironic on a number of levels that someone is campaigning for the silency of Christians based on the notion of the paradox of tolerance, when in fact Karl Popper, in his description of what he meant by that, would have been campaigning against them. And especially from the perspective of Plato, there's all these categories that are in play that have no place in the leftist theology, such as it is. Anyway, those are my thoughts. Let's go to break and come back for calls here on Stand to Reason. Stay with us.
Hey friends, would you like to be encouraged throughout your week with timely, relevant content meant to bolster your knowledge, wisdom, and character? Or maybe you have a desire to be connected with other like-minded Christians from around the world. If so, then you need to follow Stand to Reason on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Not only will you be able to interact with other Stand to Reason followers, but you'll also stay up to date and informed on our latest resources and events. In our current culture, it's important to have something of value to break up your social media feed. So just visit str.org and find the links to all of our social media platforms at the bottom of the homepage.
Is it possible to learn something from other people's hostile and critical feedback? Find out my answer in this month's episode of my podcast, Thinking Out Loud with Alan Schliemann. Look for it in iTunes, your favorite podcast app, or at the top of the homepage at str.org.
righty, Greg Kokel here. Stand to Reason's the show, of course, and your turn. So let's go to Columbus, Ohio. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Hey, Greg, how you doing?
Okay, thanks.
How would you answer a Christian church who says they're serving social justice in the way Black Lives Matter does, and they're just picking up where Martin Luther King left off? They feel that they're doing the same thing with him. I don't know how to answer them exactly.
Well, this is a claim about matters of fact, all right? And you have a Martin Luther King, okay, on the one hand, and you have Black Lives Matter on the other, all right? And you have Martin Luther King's worldview that informed his understanding about racial relations, okay? Now, the thing about Martin Luther King is he's an historical figure who wrote and spoke, and we have the record of those things. Famously, his letter from a Birmingham jail, or famously, his I Have a Dream speech there on the Mall in Washington, D.C. If you look at those things that he delivered, you will find, first of all, a deep commitment to Christianity as a foundation for his fight for civil rights for blacks, okay? And all that Christianity stands for. I mean, he was a minister, all right? I actually visited, I had a personal tour of his church and his home. I mean, it's a historical site right now, but I was able to go and see both of those and by myself. You know, I was the guest of the First Baptist Church of Montgomery, and the docent who was in charge of that gave me a private tour. It was pretty amazing. And I refused to stand in the pulpit and have a picture because I revered his contribution as a Christian minister so much. I stood to the left of the pulpit, you know, for a picture. He was a Christian preacher, and he had conservative theological views. He wasn't a progressive, and his goal was that people not see race but see human beings. Famously, I'm quoting here, loosely, but a man should be judged not by the color of his skin but by his character. So when you look at all of these particulars of what Martin Luther King said and what he stood for, and I'm going to say Reverend Martin Luther King, because most of the time people say Dr. Martin Luther King, and they take a Christian pastor and they secularize him and his views. The Reverend Martin Luther King had a certain understanding about how to solve the racial issue. And that was a change of thinking that he was able to make a tremendous amount of headway on based on a certain way of demonstrating, and that was peaceful resistance, okay, sit-ins and the like. Okay, now contrast all of those ideas, the commitment he had to Jesus Christ and a Christian worldview as a minister of the gospel, okay, at his church there in Montgomery, and his understanding of the nature of racism as a terrible evil, and what a non-racist society looked like, and that would be a colorblind society where people were judged not by the color of their skin but by their character, and then the way to reach that, the activist way, was peaceful demonstrations. You know, and even breaking the law in a peaceful fashion, okay? Nonviolent resistance, okay? Now, look at Black Lives Matter. According to these views, race is everything. According to these views, it's the idea that it's not the color of a person's skin, but their character is itself now called racism. According to Black Lives Matter, which is started by three lesbians, one of their stated goals is to destroy the nuclear family. I mean, it was in their guideline, their mission statement or something posted. They have since taken it down, but I have a copy of it. And it wasn't, it isn't like we're trying to promote God's world and God's way. It's not, it is not nonviolent resistance. It's violent resistance. Okay. And judging people by the color of their skin. And that's part and parcel to critical race theory. You know, we have these groups, whites and people of color, and whites are the people in power who are the oppressors or have been the people in power. Now the left is in power. And what do? They do the same kind of oppression. So it turns out there is no similarity between the two, none, except for they're both dealing with racial issues. And since you have a friend who has invoked Martin Luther King, who, by the way, I was 17 years old, almost 18 when he was killed. So I was an adult when all of this was going on. I remember all of this. So, you know, we have one point of view and another point of view, and somebody now is claiming parity with the two views. All you have to do is look at the details. So in what way would be the question I've asked, in what way is BLM, Black Lives Matter, like Martin Luther King in his philosophy, his perspective, his understanding, his attempts to, his methodology to dealing with racism? They can't, you know, they can't just say it. Just because they say it doesn't mean it's right. It's accurate. And this happens all the time. People say things all like this all the time. Well, and then there are descendants of King, and I don't know all that are involved. I thought I heard somebody invoked recently, and even some from that whole movement, that have made common cause, maybe with some of these more radical movements like BLM, and then are trading a little bit on their association with Reverend King. Well, I mean, that makes waves a little bit. They influence people. But the fact is, we have what Martin Luther King said. And just because somebody's related to him and is making common cause now with this other group doesn't mean that the two go together. I think it means they've defected over the last 50 years to something entirely different. And they have. Their views have changed or something, I don't know, but they can't claim the legacy of Martin Luther King when their views are contradictory to Reverend Martin Luther King. So this is a just the facts, ma'am, tactic, it seems to me.
Good. Yes, I was not, that was the argument I really wasn't confident about. And I've never been challenged on that, but I do a lot of research, a lot of apologetics, and that's one question I heard that I didn't really have an answer for. But
well, these
now I do.
I'm good, and I'm not surprised. And part of what we're trying to do now is we are experiencing. When I say we, I mean I stand to reason. What we're trying to do now is to help the body of Christ in the midst of this tsunami of assault ideologically we're getting from the political left. And how do we respond? Because I think there are a lot of Christians that hear these rhetorically charged assessments or claims, and they don't know what to say about them. They and because they are rhetorically clever and aggressively advanced, the Christian feels like, well, maybe they're right and I'm wrong because I don't know what to say, but I have a suspicion something's wrong with that, but I don't know what it is. And this unsettles the Christian, you know, and so they're looking for social justice. Well, they should be, God cares about justice. Here is society where there's injustice. Maybe I should make common cause with them. And they don't realize that social justice is a term of art of that movement. And it means, I mean, to put it simply, social paybacks is what it means. Yeah. It's not justice at all what they're actually demanding. It's revenge. It's social revenge. But Christians and many other people are not in a position to see how these ideas are being played out and how, say, Martin Luther King's concepts have been distorted. And so they don't know how to defend against them. And they find themselves just kind of being overwhelmed by this stuff. So
Yeah, the guy who does Red Pen Logic pointed us towards a preacher named Vody Balcom.
Balcom, yeah.
Who gives a,
Vody Balcom,
a great,
right.
He's,
absolutely.
He gives a great speech on what the difference is between social justice and biblical justice.
Yes.
Until I saw that, I didn't really know.
Yeah, well, if the term is deceptive, okay?
Yeah.
Just like a lot of political terms are. Like the Equality Act that's in consideration
yeah,
right now,
say that.
Or
yeah.
the Final Solution, right? You know, from you know the Third Reich. I mean, these are all words that are used rhetorically to create an impact and to, in many ways, obscure what is actually going on. And this is why we need to go back to the facts themselves, just the facts, ma'am. Is Martin Luther King well represented now by Black Lives Matter? Well, I don't know. Let's see what Martin Luther King said. And I gave you two sources, and you can find them instantly on the internet. Letter from a Birmingham jail, and then his I Have a Dream speech. And just look at, and then you isolate statements that are characteristic of his view. And I cited some of them. And so you get a sense of what his view was, and also, obviously, nonviolent. That's what all the sit-ins and the marches were about, nonviolence. Rosa Parks sitting there in the bus, in the front of the bus, and what refused to sit in the back, and then the sit-ins at the restaurants and stuff that were all part of that movement that really launched it, and then all the marches. This is nothing like what's going on in the cities all over America now when Black Lives Matter groups are present and what they're doing. There is not a shred of the dignity that was characterized by Martin Luther King, and that's because their worldview is very different, and it's very clear when you look at what King said that he represented, and you look at the backdrop for his entire life as a Christian minister of the gospel.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, you're so welcome. I'm glad you called and I got a chance to speak about this. Let's go quickly to our next break, and we got more folks on board here to talk to in just a moment on Stand to Reason.
Do you want to become a more knowledgeable Christian ambassador without sitting through a formal course on apologetics? Well, we've made that possible for you through our STR Quick Reference app. Available for free on iTunes and Google Play, the STR Quick Reference app holds a wealth of information summarizing what you need to know on a range of topics. Learn how to defend the faith, see how other worldviews compare to Christianity, and master the biblical view of morality all through short, engaging videos. Before you know it, you'll be well-versed on a number of important apologetics topics. In addition, the Quick Reference app also includes a Bible with text and audio, as well as some featured STR resources, all to enhance your learning experience. The STR Quick Reference app will equip you to engage in thoughtful conversation about the key issues of life from a classical Christian perspective. Visit iTunes or the Google Play Store today and download the STR Quick Reference app. And if you enjoy the app, make sure you give it a 5-star review.
Have you ever wondered how Stand to Reason is able to produce fresh, accessible content each week? We rely on generous donors so that we can provide you with the tools and tactics you need to be an effective ambassador for Christ. If you've benefited from this podcast or any of our donor-provided resources, including our apps, blog posts, articles, and short videos, consider making a financial contribution to Stand to Reason today. Just visit str.org/donate to show your financial support. It has been an honor providing you with a host of free resources for more than 27 years to help you give voice to the Christian worldview. Help us continue by making a financial gift today at str.org/donate.
Quick, a postscript to my comments on the last call here, just so there's not any confusion, and I'm going to offer an analogy here to make my point. A couple of months ago, maybe, we had Tim Barnett on board, and we were talking about one of his red pen logics. Did I say red light? Red pen logics. that, sorry, Tim, that had to do with Christianity being the groundwork or the grounding worldview for science. And that was being challenged. And we pointed out that, no, this was pretty much the universal worldview held by those who were founding fathers, so to speak, in different scientific disciplines. Now, we also pointed out we are not weighing in on every detail of their theology and saying that every detail of their theology was consistent with a classical or orthodox Christianity. We were saying that it was the worldview that informed their enterprise and that made science possible. That was the deal, okay? And I want to make the same kind of qualification with Martin Luther King. The point I've been making is not that Martin Luther King agrees at every single point of theology that I might promote or believe in, or that other Orthodox Christians, he might have had aberrant views in some sense. I don't know. I'm not a student of that, but I just want to make this point so there's no confusion. I'm making the point that it is his Christian worldview that is the foundation upon which he is building the civil rights movement, and its appeal for race not to be an issue, but that everyone is equal before God. We are judged not by the color of our skin, but by the content of our character. Okay? And now, he might have had strange doctrines in certain ways. That doesn't change my point at all. That's the point I'm making. Okay? And so in the main, with regards to the worldview that grounded his enterprise of civil rights and the way that he went about doing that, which is peaceful resistance, there is little kinship or none with the kind of movement we see happening today. All right, that's my point. In any event, let's go to, when there's a flashing green light, this would be Richard, somewhere in California. Richard, welcome to the show.
Hey, good afternoon, Greg. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right, thanks.
Hey, I just want to push back on something you said a little earlier in the show about, as a person on the left myself, the idea that people on the left, or more broadly, the left is anti-reason, and you were talking about intolerance.
Uh-huh.
As a person myself on the left, that doesn't at all really jive with the way I interact with Christians,
uh-huh,
or others myself, or anyone I know, although you can turn on the news any given night and you can see extreme examples from students at Berkeley,
sure,
shutting down conversation. You can see absurdities in certain parts of Oregon, for instance, right? But I just think that the left is not such a monolithic group as to say the left is unreasonable or intolerant.
Okay, well, I actually agree with you in a qualified way, and I'm glad you called, Richard, to express these ideas. I do have a before I explain how I agree with you, I'm curious, when you say I'm a person of the left, what does that mean?
I would not consider myself politically progressive, but I would be of the left.
Okay, what does that mean, though? If you're not politically progressive, that's
closer to a Democrat than a Republican, I suppose, in my political voting.
Okay. Of course, right now, I mean, I'm just trying to be descriptive in an accurate way. The Democratic Party is heaved massively to the left of the extreme left of the political spectrum, and in virtually everything it promotes now. So I'm trying to.
I think what's happening. Sorry to cut you off.
No, that's all right. I'm just trying to get clear on what you mean when you're a person of the left.
Yeah, so definitely the metrics are moving, right?
Yeah.
We're seeing a chasm between the right, what's now considered the right, and the left, and there's really very little middle ground at all.
Yeah.
And so I would say center left. Possibly,
okay,
because,
that's what I was going to suggest.
Yeah, I have some lean. I mean, I was a Republican at one point in my life. I was a Christian, or at least believed as a Christian. I know theologically some people might say I was never a Christian, but for all intent and purpose.
Different issue. Right.
Yeah, separate issue. But I would now identify as a person who is secular and on the left, but I also sympathize with anybody who says, would decry intolerance. However, I would say it's okay to be intolerant when it comes to actual legislation. We would never tolerate in a society today racist language. We would never, those are things that there's general consensus on, right?
I don't know that that's true. When it says, I think there's general consensus that racist language, and it's not entirely clear anymore what that actually means, but let's just let that lie for a moment, is wrong. It is immoral. That is different from saying that I don't tolerate it being spoken. Okay. And the sentiment now. Anything that is identified by someone as racist, whatever that means, is something that should be silenced. And there I have a difficulty with that understanding of reigning in intolerance.
Yeah, it depends on the platform, I suppose, and the occasion, right? So, intolerance on Twitter maybe looks a lot different than intolerance in academia or in my house of Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I don't even know what the word. To be honest with you, I think, and this kind of goes back to original thing. Intolerance is something defined by the left, and it's something that is what the left doesn't do, but the right does do. So therefore, the left is justified in not tolerating the right's acts of so-called intolerance because they see even the expression of alternate views as a danger to the common good. And that's the way it's been characterized.
Well, I think we both do that, right? I mean, I did that when I was on the right. I was intolerant to communism, for example, right? I just didn't tolerate the ideas in just ways where I wouldn't have conversations with people. I wasn't trying to build relationships.
Okay, we're using the word differently then.
We might be, yeah. Well, and that gets my point is we both have different. Right, it becomes a semantic game because we both have different interpretations of what tolerance is and how we use it. But we both experience. We both use intolerance and we tolerate people in our in-groups, but we tend not to tolerate people we think are reprehensible.
Okay, this is where the definition is critical. And I'm jumping in a little bit because I see
the
clock is ticking, and I don't mean to be rude here, but this is where these distinctions are really important because the intolerance showed by the left is an intolerance of views. And what that means is your view should not get a voice. All right. The intolerance on the right, which is called intolerance by the left, is not that the views shouldn't get a voice, but that the views are wrong.
But here are the reasons why.
But
if I'm on the left and I don't fit that category, then we have a problem because I'm on the left and I tolerate views.
Oh, well, then you're not intolerant in that particular way. But see, this is where...
Right, but when you say the left is intolerant and they don't tolerate views, that's a mischaracterization of... most people I know.
But you just, when you were more careful and I asked more questions about what you mean by on the left, it took you a while to land on a spot and then you said center left. I am speaking to those on the left and characteristically the voices that we hear are shrill and their attempt to silence the opposition, not just oppose with ideas and with reasons, but to silence. And that's the objection that I have.
So, I mean, I might have an objection to that, but when you say, I mean, I am firmly on the left. I vote Democrat. I am pro-choice. I am pro-gay marriage. I'm on the left. So,
okay,
but I am tolerant. For instance, I'm having this conversation on a Christian radio show.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I'm very tolerant of ideas, but when it comes to legislation, right, I wouldn't tolerate certain practices in my community and vote for them, right?
Right.
I wouldn't vote on a school board. I wouldn't elect somebody on a school board where I felt they had immoral, they were going to enact moral policies in a school.
Well, we're the same in that regard, and that comports with my distinctions of different types of tolerance that I talked about from the book on relativism, that when there's a tolerance of behavior, this is where we draw the line.
Sure.
Now, you and I might draw the line at a little different places, but we see there's a legitimacy to there. Frankly, everybody acknowledges that. The real, where the action is, so to speak, in the cultural discourse is what tolerance means with regards to the expression of ideas. And at this point, I'm going to acknowledge that you are not, I guess I'm just going to say you're an exception to my characterization, but I do not think that my characterization is an inaccurate one of the left taken as a whole, all right?
But I tend to think it is. I mean, I work in academia, in education, and it just doesn't describe anybody I know or anybody I interact with on the left.
You know, I see so many articles, though, especially in the academy, where people who advocate alternate views from what's politically correct. They're not in the narrative. They get shouted down. They get chastised. They get canceled. They lose their job. I have a friend that happened to.
But that happens equally on the right.
I do not believe that.
Sure. If you were teaching at a Christian school,
The difference is
right, but that's on the right.
No, it's not. First of all, you don't know much about Christian schools at this point in time.
My daughter didn't go to a Christian
right,
school.
Okay. No, I'm saying at this point in time, there are all kinds of Christian schools.
My daughters go to a Christian school.
Okay, well, so a Christian school. I'm talking about Christian schools. The problem is me finding Christian schools that I could say that's a safe place to send your kid. So there's lots of flexibility there. Okay. Plus, the difference is Christian schools have their parochial by nature.
Sure.
Okay.
But that was just one example. There are people on the right do this all the time. There are ideologies you can't, there are lines you can't cross on the right. There are lines you can't. This is why people were jumping from Fox News to OAN, right? Because there are heresies on the right as well.
Well, of course there are, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about silencing opposition, and that is the purview of the left.
No, the right does it as well.
Okay, I'll let you have the last word on that one. I'm very glad that you called, Richard.
Okay? Hey, I appreciate the dialogue.
Okay, good going.
All right, thank you.
Got to run, all out of time here, and it's always great to have a mixture of points of view. Greg Kokel here, Stand to Reason. Give them heaven, friends. Bye-bye now.